The humanist seeks radical new ways to understand and practice what is real and what it means to be our most human selves.
Welcome to The Humanist, one of our inaugural episodes. And I wanted to begin it with an origin story of sorts. How did this podcast even come into being? I want to share a story that happened, pretty traumatic, but something that is very worth sharing and is a part of the reason why The Humanist exists. Before we begin, thank you to some of the people who have jumped in and joined in to help make The Humanist exist in the first place. Before it even came into existence, you all have been helping. Shout out to Dale Woodfin with this music that you're listening to. I gave some ideas of some directions I would like our opening music to be, and Dale nailed it, and it's seemingly effortlessly. So Dale, shout out to you for this great music. Also to Umphreys McGee, who said, yes, you can use a segment of our 2022 song, Small Strides, which you can hear on the outro of this episode. Thank you to you all for helping make things begin. And also to friends of the show, who you will be hearing from shortly in episodes to come right up. Ben Cake jumping in, having some long-form conversations with me right off the bat. And Richie Daigle jumping in right away, having rich conversations with us. And James Dawson with some very fun early opening conversations. You three and other friends of the show to come, thank you for your participation, for your efforts to get going. With that said, let's jump in to the story. It was July 22nd of 2023. So not yet a year from the time of this recording, I nearly drowned on the Ocoee River. And what is fascinating to me is, you know, I think we are going to also do a segment on synchronicity and what does synchronicity actually mean. But I think there are just some wild things to me is, you know, human beings, yes, we look to make meaning out of the circumstances of our lives. But some things it's, you know, I think that, you know, I'm going to advocate for looking for meaning and not just denying it. But that, again, that is the subject for another podcast on synchronicity. But what was leading up to this incident? I happened to have been reading a book by David Hawkins, his last that he before his life ended in 2012. It was called Letting Go. And it was a lot about this idea of surrendering. So I'm kind of, this is a preliminary heads up for what's to come with the story. And I was also, it's interesting, that very summer, last summer, we also got the book by Bono of U2, Paul David Hewson, who wrote a book titled Surrender. So I was reading and thinking about this idea of surrender. And then Shelley, if you don't know Shelley from the Big Self Show, Shelley's my wife and co-founder of Big Self School. And she and I did a podcast episode on May 23rd of 2023, almost 2 months exactly to the day before this near drowning incident. And I'm going to play you in a moment a little excerpt of what that discussion was about this idea of, do you let go? What's the difference between letting go or giving up? And so just check out this little excerpt before we go on.
And this is such a great question. Well, what's the difference between letting go and giving up? And that is a really, for me, a complicated question to answer. And I've had to do a lot of thinking because it's very different for different people, and it relies on a felt sense, an energetic kind of shift. And so that's what we wanted to talk about today and share. What is the difference between the energy, the experience of surrendering and letting go versus the experience and the emotions around giving up? And so I think the semantics we use a lot interchangeably, but the experience is what is very different. And let's talk about surrender first. Yeah. How do you think about that?
Well, I love the way that you framed it as like being a complicated subject on its face. But as I've kind of thought about it and unearthed it a bit, it's become more and more clear to me. So because it's like one, surrender is taking me above the line, so to speak, into more consciousness and into more of a learner's mind, with the acceptance that surrender kind of brings, I begin to sense this, you're right, energetically, this renewed perspective, you know, sometimes it involves a little suffering, but then we're receiving it. And this is really hard to say, but receiving the suffering or the anxiety we're experiencing as even possibly a gift. Mm-hmm. Certainly asking, what can I be learning from this experience?
To me, surrendering is always a movement into spaciousness. It's always accompanied by a settling into kind of an authentic being, which I know that it might be hard for people to really understand what I mean by that, but it's an expansion, but it's also, it comes with this, like the mind is quiet. There's no story. There's a settling into it. There's a allowing and a energetically kind of move. It's almost like a thump. You kind of drop into truth. Like, this is what I know to be true.
Wow.
And in that place, you can experience a lot of stillness and spaciousness is the way that I think about it. And to me, we surrender into soul work. It's like home base. You kind of always known it, but you've fought it. And then when you surrender, you kind of settle into this coming home kind of feeling. Conversely, giving up, it's all that was fueled by ego work. And that, to me, it's a downshift. We're surrendering, like you're saying, is above the line. Like, it's almost an expansion into a higher level. Mm-hmm. Giving up is a diminishment. And it's out of a exhaustion. It's out of a depletion. It's out of a can't keep this up. I don't want to do this. So there's a diminishment that was kind of in the fault lines. And I think that's the ego's drive. It's like, when you're doing the ego's work, at some point, for many of us, we want to give up. We don't want to keep doing it.
Okay, so with that setup, let me tell the story. You know, the other synchronicities and how I put it all together, it was 8 years nearly to the day when I went out this July of 22nd, 2023. 8 years nearly to the day since the last time I had been paddleboarding also just on the stretch of the Ocoee River, because it was also, this is the same area where when I was paddling on the lower Ocoee, that my boxer Huck, who was 9 months old, suffered a heart attack. It turns out he had a heart condition due to what we didn't realize at the time, but it was probably because he came from what is referred to as a puppy mill that we didn't understand. And So there was some, maybe he was overbred. We don't really know, but we did know that he had a heart murmur. And, but we were just living life with him, trying to, you know, take him out into nature and have a nice dog life. Well, he only lived 9 months. But I was really attached to him even in that 9 months. And I remember in the mad scramble of just trying to remember the events of Huck's sudden death those 8 years ago, that when I came back, I just immediately wrote it just all down, just without stopping, every little detail I could remember. And it helped me process it. And there were some wild details. It's another story. But it was like, I was in this immediate shock and grief, and I was just kind of, as I was uncovering it, it was just this weird experience of just uncontrollable, like just shaking, sobbing that went on and off for a few days afterwards. And my kids were even a little concerned about me, just kind of randomly breaking down in the middle of the day, starting to think about him. But when it came to my own self recently, when I almost died, I really kept it as kind of bottled in for whatever that's worth. So what happened? Basically, at a certain point over the past summer, I was just realizing that the season was slipping away again. And once another year was about to go by when I hadn't gone paddleboarding. So for people who may have heard of the Ocoee, it was it's the famous river that was in the Olympics in 1996. And people who know much about the Ocoee understand it for the class 3 and 4 rapids. And yes, the upper two sections of it, you don't paddleboard. But this lower Ocoee, it's dam controlled, and it's a beautiful spot to go paddleboarding, in spite of how this story goes. And, you know, we used to go out on it a lot. We would take our families. It's an hour away from us. And there were some just incredibly good times. At least a decade younger self had a group of friends. I remember 2012, we gathered at the sort of height of our community. We had over 40 of us in total, if you include wives, kids, friends, just to paddle down this stretch of the Ocoee together. It's pretty shallow most of the way. It's got a nice little current that there was a place to take out about an hour and a half away. Or you can go a full 3 hours and about 8 miles down to the Nancy Ward gravesite, which is just a place to take out. So anyway, here I am, July 22nd, 2023. I'm with my brother, John, and our mutual friend, Juan Bustamante. And we're all just there for the first time in years. And it was a wonderful time, beautiful day. You know, I had my right ankle leashed to my light Jimmy Sticks board, Brother John floating on my other board, my big bad YOLO board. Juan was struggling to keep up on his inflatable that wasn't completely inflated. But, you know, the sky, it was radiant. It was just this ideal day. It was one of those days where you just kind of see these nimbo cumulus clouds hovering above the ridges and mountaintops, and the current was going strong, but all that meant, it was just pleasant. You didn't have to paddle much at all. Just easy going, calm strokes if you wanted to go a little faster. Pleasant, ordinary July day. And in fact, it was so pleasant that I was like, I don't even need my cheesy life jacket on. Most of the water's just barely waist deep. It was very clear. And so, you know, I did. I took off my personal flotation device, put it on the top of my board right next to my water bottle. And that was about all that I had with me. Yeah, but it was to our collective memory that this Nancy Ward gravesite, this takeout, was a good 3 hours from our original put-in. So after like an hour and a half, we were approaching this familiar old bridge that when you saw this bridge, you needed to be looking for the takeout. But suddenly it dawned on us, wait a minute, right as we were beginning to pass it, that was the takeout. And so I was like, hey, you know, it's too late to make it, but no problem. You know, I got off my board and, you know, it was a surprisingly deeper in this section than it had been the entire previous 8 miles. It was about neck deep, but I could still, you know, touch the bottom. And I was figuring that any moment now is about to get a little shallower. I was just going to stop the board in the flow of the current. But it was kind of frustrating. I remember I kept trying to get traction, a toehold, and I just keep getting pushed down the current. And before I knew it, I was getting near this bridge, which is about 100 yards now from where the takeout was. And then that was when I felt my legs kind of taken out from under me. And in the middle of the experience, I had no idea what it was. I just thought maybe it could have been a tree, a branch, a rock. And in the end, it turns out it was one of the concrete foundations of this bridge. But I remember, so at that point, I started just clinging to the board. So my feet were kind of taken out from under me. But, and you know, the current's going strong and I'm clinging to the board and not moving downriver anymore, just staying in place. And the board was kind of caught. I wasn't putting all this together. I was just experiencing it in the moment. And of course, my leash was still attached to my ankle. So I was trying to reach down quickly and just undo the leash, but it was really, really Velcroed and it just held fast. That was the first little tingle of fear that I remember feeling. And I realized I just didn't feel comfortable letting go of the board and just kind of going under, getting a good grip on the Velcro leash and freeing myself. And in retrospect, I think if I had understood what was going on, I might've just done that. I might've just been like, I'm going under and I'm reaching for this leash and I'm I'm just ripping it off and I'll be free. It was scary to think about really risking, like, would I kind of get sucked under if I, you know, was down there trying to, how long would it take? And so I was just holding onto the board to keep afloat. And then pretty quickly I was like, wait, I'm really kind of stuck here and I'm getting tired fast and I'm afraid to let go of this board. And so that was the very first time that I just said, help, in this rush of current, right? And it's like, not that I could be heard that well. I didn't even have time to look around to see where Juan and John were. Then when he was behind us, trailing behind us. So he saw what we did and he made the takeout. And John, brother John, had, instead of going more toward the middle of the river, like I ended up, he was more along the bank. So now, by now, like the river was between us in the strong current. I could just kind of tell that I was beginning to be pulled under and it wasn't something that was, I was fatiguing really, really fast. I kept reaching down with one hand for my leash occasionally, and I just felt I just could not get to it and get it off. And it was just kind of instinctively, I was afraid to go under the water. And then I began, I think it was in this position that I began to also, I did start going under the water a bit, still trying to hold on to the board, and that panic began to really set in pretty fast. And I was just like, oh my God, help, help, help. The second time I just really cried out for it. And I just realized that this was like, I think the next level was like, nobody was going to be able to save me. Adrenaline was just going and my body was just starting to just really, really fight. And so that to me was kind of the first phase of beginning to drown, just fighting with everything I could to stay afloat. The board still stuck. And I did not know what to do, but I was going to drown staying in that position because I was just kind of getting pulled under with the strong current as well. So at a certain point, I just, you know, I could see John across the river at this point, and he was yelling my name, but I could just tell that with how strong the current was, there was no way that he was going to get to me. And so after a certain moment, and this is like that kind of, was it surrendering? Yeah, was it giving up or was it surrendering and letting go? And so finally, there was kind of no other choice to me. I did just let go and surrendered to the current. And so the board remained stuck. And then I was now facing downriver and kind of bobbing up and down with my legs still stuck to this leash that, and it's hard to explain, but with the strength of the current, it was just, you could not reach down, even with all your strength, to go under, because I couldn't go under anymore. I was doing everything I could to stay above the water. I kept going down, going underneath the water. Water was beginning to rush up my nose. And I was, and I began to think, this can't be how I'm going to die. This cannot be how I'm going to die on the same river that my dog died on. These are the thoughts going through my mind. And not now. And I remember I reached one more time for my ankle and just couldn't get it off. While my body was... my body was fighting just with everything it had. So it was like it had a different brain going on. It was the adrenaline and my legs are kicking. My arms are, I'm just trying desperately to keep fighting to stay above the current and breathe. And, but in my mind, I was beginning to realize in this completely ordinary moment that it was these might very well be the very last thoughts I had and the last bit of consciousness of my life. And I remember only a few flashes of the thoughts that I was having. The remembering self and the experiencing self are very different, but, I remember thinking all that anxiety and fretting about your oldest son was a waste of time. He's going to be fine. Just fine. And all those times you freaked out before speaking in front of others was for nothing. You shouldn't have been afraid. And you should have been writing, not wasting your time chasing money. Writing was your gift. You never should have denied your calling and your gift. That's what stuck with me. And who knows how quickly those thoughts flashed through my consciousness, but that's along the lines of there was this sense of how brief all of this is and the pettiness that we tend to live in the anxieties. And then something happened that I'm going to say to me is miraculous. My leash just broke. Just suddenly just broke. And I remember, like, suddenly my leg was free and I wasn't getting pulled under. And I was just, there was this immediate exhilaration and unbelievable gratitude. I was still in the middle of the river. I still needed to give a little extra effort to get to the shore and not just float straight down the river. Like everything else had been, my shades were gone. My hat was gone. My wedding ring was gone. Everything. The board was gone. The paddle long since gone. But I still had my swim trunks on and my heavy, soggy, wet shoes. And I thought about, you know, as I was trying to swim to the shore and they felt really heavy, I thought, oh, do I have it in me to rip off these shoes? I didn't. So with these like shoes feeling like stones, I just, and my legs are like jelly, I dog paddled to the tree trunk where my brother was. And when I got there, I was just shocked by my body. It was just like on its own accord, like my animal instinctual body was just heaving these deep, exhausted breaths for several minutes. I don't know how long really, but way longer than I would have. For quite a while, just heaving. And I remember I was just holding on to that tree trunk and I looked up through the branches of the trees at the sky that we had just been looking up at that sky so pleasantly before. And I realized that from now on in this moment, I thought every single next thing that happens to me didn't have to happen. This was my second chance. And I was also struck by just how incredibly ordinary everything seemed. And so after I caught my breath, John and Juan were just kind of shaking their heads, kind of making sure I was okay. Juan did save my board. He, I think, had floated past me trying to come help. You know, we were managing our way up the steep slope and along some of the private property, trying to get back. And, so in retrospect, and after writing about this, talking about it, it became clear to my coach and some others that I shared the story with. It was like once I surrendered and once I gave up my struggle with the current that was pulling me below, well, that's when I was freed. And I was struck a little by the significance of Huck dying 8 years prior. And I just remember in that time, it was a summer where I had this huge ambition to still trying to hang on to my literary aspirations. And I was trying to write a novel. And it was around that very time that I gave up on that pursuit and began to judge myself for them, for those, what I was kind of calling those romantic early adulthood dreams. And, you know, I mean, I really haven't written a poem for 10 years, since about 2014. I kind of gave up that calling or pursuit. And what immediately struck me, though, and what continues to resonate the most was what it felt like to truly and nearly instantly surrender my life to the inevitable. It wasn't one of the near-death kind of experiences that you see on TV or hear about in documentaries. I didn't see light or ancestors, didn't have this peace, but I did have those flashing thoughts. Because I didn't get to that extremity or loss of consciousness. It was probably a few moments away. I was just about to surrender to just going under the water. I do want to share this experience, but it's not to impress you. That's what I've been hesitant about. It's like, I don't want to try to share something that is like, look what a special experience, intense experience I had. But it's something that I actually feel called to share. There was this experience of really abandoning and going beyond that we call the ego self, my tiny little ego self. And there was something in that moment of terror that was speaking a perspective of essence to me. As I was just getting stripped down to nothing, and I was having these final thoughts and emotions, and there was this enormous sadness and also an acceptance that it was just going to be the way it was. And it wasn't that I didn't turn out to be rich and famous or even really that I could have like worked harder. It was that I spent a lot of times worrying, a lot of time just worrying about things I didn't need to worry about. I guess that's what it boils down to. Maybe also that I, in some sense, denied who I was or who I was born to be or become. So with that said, you know, I think it's a very important part of the experience. It doesn't mean that, okay, so it doesn't mean, this is why I earlier called it a shock point. Like shock points, peak experiences, these things that stretch you or expand you, shift your perspective. Yes, like it did do that. I guess I could have done a lot of denial. I think we all are capable of doing that with some of our experiences. We're capable of repressing or suppressing and, you know, telling ourselves we need to toughen up. Of course, there's the stupidity of not wearing my personal flotation device. I could have denied was I really drowning? Was it really such a miracle that the leash broke right before I felt like I was gonna go under for the last time? And, you know, I do think that we do a lot of that. And we can discuss what we do with the experiencing self and the remembering self and big T traumas and little T's. But what I feel like is right is way more than like just sharing a cautionary tale. What I've experienced is this kind of experience doesn't just automatically change you forever, like a lot of peak experiences. You have to keep working and you have to keep living. And life is not always this extraordinary experience. In fact, it's usually ordinary. I guess a couple of other thoughts for some takeaways here is I guess for a while I was after I processed it and in the weeks afterwards when I felt better, I was completely forgetting about the experience and just living my pretty ordinary life with my ordinary fears and anxieties. I mean, I made some small adjustments here and there, but whenever I would get still, I would try to re-remember the experience, not re-traumatize myself, but when I would really rethink about the struggle and that experience of feeling so helpless to what was about to happen to me, that's how I've been able to pull myself back to what I do. I try to do that. It's a useful guide. And since then, I've begun practicing mindfulness and to re-engage with the meaning and purpose of my life and why I'm even here. And that's part of why I wanted to record this as one of the early episodes, because I have been continuing to say yes more and more to things, to being open to what I can learn, and to living more consciously. Actually, as I'm relating this experience, is like I'm reminded of the famous story, the misfit in Flannery O'Connor's A Good Man is Hard to Find. And at the end of the story, after the misfit finally does kill the grandmother, he famously says, I think it's something like, she would have been a good woman had she had someone to put a gun to her head every day. And we don't live with a gun to our head every day or nearly drowning. These are extraordinary experiences, thank goodness. But I think that that's in the end what I wanted to share here is, you know, if maybe you're listening to this and you're thinking of the story I'm sharing, and a lot of people just don't get second chances. They don't get to speak about what happened to them and come back and share. And I want to say that remembering this experience does help me do some shadow work. It's helped me step into the powerful emotion of courage. And a lot of times, Shelley and I, when we founded Big Self School in 2020, one of our earliest mottos was play big without the burnout. And I've really asked myself, what are ways that I'm not playing big? How have I played small? And what are the stories that I tell myself to keep myself playing small? And those little self-beliefs that in some ways I like maybe felt the judgment of others and let that control my behaviors. Or who are you to do this? And I think a lot of us hold that in. And so I share the story as a way of trying to say something, share something, an experience I had less than a year ago that really got my attention. And it's still in process of transforming me. And so this podcast is we want to talk about things that matter, things that are true and real as we can get. And we're going to have a lot of interesting conversations around those things as we explore. And so this is my invitation to you. Let's step into our courage together. Speaking of David Hawkins, he has this kind of, there's emotions wheels, which help us look at different kinds of emotions and what they mean. And David Hawkins has this sort of hierarchy where there's these lower level emotions, which are broadly called negative emotions. And then as you go higher and higher and higher up, they become positive and they become these very powerful emotional states to be in. And the turning point emotion, right above anger. Anger is actually a very powerful, energizing emotion that serves a lot of purposes, but is still just barely in the negative range. And then the next one up is courage. And courage is the very first one. If you're in courage, you are starting to have a powerful energy and you're in a positive territory of emotions. And so let's step in to our courage together, and let's be aware together of the things on the surface that we're struggling with, that are pulling us down, and in some ways quite literally killing us. Stress does kill us, which we'll talk about in a future episode. Addictions, obviously, if they don't kill us, they certainly hold us down. So together in authenticity and vulnerability, with self-observations, and without judgment, in this acceptance and surrender, let's be open to the learning. Together. Life is there to show us if we'll allow ourselves to be open to it. Wondering what Big Self School is all about? Well, check us out at BigSelfSchool.com and see what we can do for you with workshops or trainings.